I am Planta on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. The internationally acclaimed and best-selling author Yung Chang joins me now. She's in Vancouver promoting her already critically acclaimed biography, Empress Dowager Cixi, the concubine who launched modern China. In it, she chronicles the life of Cixi, who bears the emperor's son. At the age of 5, he becomes emperor, and she launches a coup against the regents appointed and essentially rules China. From 1861 to her death in 1908, she casts an influential shadow on China. Deng Xiaoping, who succeeds Mao, gets a lot of credit for putting China on a modern path, but it's the path envisioned by the Empress Dowager. I'll get Ms. Chang to tell us more about Cixi, this book, and China, its past, and what from this book we might glean about its future. The Empress Dowager was, as Ms. Chang contends, the most powerful woman in the history of China. Yung Chang's previous books, Wild Swans and Mao the Unknown Story, which she co-wrote with her husband John Halliday, were big bestsellers around the world. Her books have been translated into more than 40 languages and have sold more than 15 million copies around the world, except in mainland China, where they are banned. The website for more is at yungchang.net. The book is published by Random House. Please welcome to the Planta on the Line program in Vancouver today, Yung Chang. Ms. Chang, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. Thank you.
You're very welcome. So let's begin at the start of Cixi's life. At 16, it's not quite the beginning, but at 16, I guess, she's chosen to be one of the emperor's concubines. Is that right?
Yes, it's correct. I mean, Chinese emperors could have one empress and as many concubines as they liked. And Cixi, like hundreds of girls, was paraded in front of the emperor. She caught his eye, and she became one of the concubines, a low-rank concubine.
And so what was her growing up like? I mean, her parents, were they influential at all? Or?
No. Cixi's parents were one of the ruling families. She was from an official's family. In those days, the girls were not given proper education, which actually may not be all that bad for Cixi, because education in those days meant that you spend 10 years learning by rote these sort of incomprehensible, Confucian classics, incomprehensible for children. And she didn't go through that process. She was only half educated, and her mind was left free to soak in new ideas. So as soon as she came to power through launching the coup and ousting 8 powerful regents, she opened the doors of China, and she made contacts with the West. And it was from 1861, from her coming to power, that China opened its doors.
Were you able to discover, when you were looking at her early life, sort of any inkling towards ambition or, say, a desire for power on her part?
Well, I think she was certainly interested in politics, in current affairs. These things were not supposed to be the kind of the domains of women. But in her family, her father discussed these things with her, and I think there was certainly a political interest. And as for power, a lot of politicians are interested in power, and it's just what you use this power for, or how you came to power, and what you use this power for. And she came to power. Her coup was actually extremely popular, and the disturbance caused was next to none, according to the sort of British envoy in Beijing at the time. And it was not as much as the reshuffle of a ministry, because everybody thought China couldn't go on down the road of seeking confrontation with the West, refusing to open its doors to have anything to do with the West. And because what had just happened was the famed Old Summer Palace, Yuan Ming Yuan, had been burned by the invading British. Because the British wanted more trade, and Cixi's late husband absolutely refused that. She was able to set China on the right path. She used up her power, actually benefited people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
Because one of the first things she did when she opened the doors was to import food to feed the Chinese population, because China at that time hadn't been able to feed its population for some time. So with the open door, with the trade, with the money, she was able to better people's lives.
And upon her death, what was the line that people asked, who will look after us now that she's gone?
I'm terribly sorry.
On her death, what did the people say? They said that, who will look after us now?
Yes, peasants.
Yeah.
She was liked. She was, one may say, according to Paul Bach, who grew up
right
under her, because Paul Bach's parents were American missionaries in China then. And the small town people and the peasants loved her. And the other thing is, of course, the most important thing actually is she introduced modernity into China and transformed a medieval empire into a modern society. And China acquired nearly everything that was available. We associate with modernity, railways, electricity, telegraphs, telephones, a modern navy, an army with modern equipment, and political reforms. She banned foot binding, this practice that tortured Chinese women for more than 1,000 years, basically to crush baby girls' feet to produce these tiny 3-inch golden lilies, so they were called.
Yeah.
She introduced Western legal systems to replace medieval Chinese legal codes and abolished the practices like death by 1,000 cuts.
Mm-hmm.
She introduced the new education to replace the old educational system. And today, what we have in China and in the Chinese world is not the old Chinese educational system that existed at Cixi's time. It was the new educational system she introduced based on the Western model. She championed women's liberation, I mentioned, and her last project was to turn China into a constitutional monarchy with an elected parliament. She was ready to give the vote to the Chinese. I think she should be remembered for these things.
So why hasn't she been remembered for these things? I mean, what has her reputation been in Chinese history before your book?
Well, it's all awful. And if you, Google her, you'll see she has been for the last 100 years, and maybe still by many people seen as a despot, a cruel despot. They accused her of all sorts of murders and things, most of which were not true, and she was accused of being a diehard conservative and dragged China behind, and it fell on the Republicans to rescue China from her, which again is not true. She introduced the modernity. On her deathbed, she did commit a murder. The day before she died, she murdered her adopted son, who was the emperor of the time. And the reason from her point of view, was that if she had died and he was alive, China would land on the lap of Japan.
Mm.
And because the Japanese had been working on the adopted son, the emperor, and was, had been trying quite successfully and to make him a puppet of Japan. So, you know...
How soon after her death, though, did the monarchy end in China?
The China became a republic 3 years after she died.
And do you think if she had lived, it would have withstood, say, sort of republican movements?
Well, there was certainly the republican movement. Whether she had a plan to make this constitutional monarchy, but whether she could succeed. And whether this constitutional monarchy would last is another matter. And she had some fatal problems. And one was that the monarchy was Manchu. The Manchus were an ethnic group from northeast China who conquered China in the 17th century. And they were only 1% of the Chinese population. So it's already very difficult to get a vast majority to have loyalty to this small group of conquerors. In fact, when Cixi introduced her political reforms, when she sent students abroad, when she allowed a free press, a very free press, unprecedented and arguably unsurpassed,
mm-hmm.
and people advised her not to do these things, and they said, if you send people abroad, they would learn all this heresy. They would learn to demand majority rule, and so people wanted her to wind the clock back and bring China into a more tough absolute monarchy, but she refused. She wanted to, go with the history. And if the monarchy was going to survive, she wanted to survive with majority support. Now, on her deathbed, she realized that this may well not succeed. With her alive, there was a chance, but without her, it may well not survive. So she made arrangements that basically shows that she accepted republicanism.
Mm.
Well, the thing is, if she were alive, one might speculate, so would we still have an absolute, have a constitutional monarchy? I mean, she faced this Manchu monarchy problem. She also faced aggressive Japanese and also a very aggressive Russia, which became a communist Russia, and both coveted China. And so 20th century China was particularly in a perilous situation. And whether she could conquer all these problems is not something I feel certain of.
Now, when you look at the history as you have in the course of this book and in your previous books, mm-hmm. and you look at where China is today, are there parallels between where it is today and, say, the Empress Dowager's times?
Yes, there are certain parallels. And I think in both China today and the Empress Dowager's last years, the societies have parallels. There have been open-door policies, and the economy has been doing well. There is a degree of prosperity, and there is also rising expectation and aspiration. And where do we go from here? She chose to push forward for political reforms. And it seems that in today's China, in many, there was many people wanted to wind the clock back and return to Mao's time. And that's the difference from the Empress Dowager. And that's the scenario I dread.
Yeah. Now, when I got the book, when your publicist sent me the book, I looked at the cover, and I just assumed that it was like a stage shot, like an actress posed for this photograph. But that's really her, right?
Oh, yes. Well, the publisher's colored an original photograph.
Oh, I see.
That was a shot in black and white in 1903. And it was amazing, you know, the negatives of the photographs are all in the Smithsonian Museum in Washington, and because the Freer Gallery bought the archives of the photographer. And in the Forbidden City in China today, and even in Cixi's time, they were sent prints. And in the prints, I have some of them in my book as illustrations. Cixi looked remarkably young. In fact, people in China have been talking about or even writing about how Cixi kept her looks. She looked not like an elderly lady nearly 70.
Yeah.
She looked 40, 30 even. The reason, of course, is very simple. And all the prints were airbrushed.
Ah.
So airbrushing prints in 1903, and when Cixi saw the prints, she was thrilled. And this isn't, you know, what her mirror had been telling her for years. So she had them blown up to giant sizes and hung them all over the palace. Now she then invited the studio chief to come to the palace to make a film, because it was the ambition of the photo studio to be a filmmaker. And indeed, he became China's first filmmaker. Together with an opera star, whose biggest fan was Cixi. By the way, she also revolutionized the Peking opera and turned it from a village art form into a sophisticated form of national opera. Now, these two then got together and made China's first film in 1905. So, you know, arguably, Cixi could be called China's first executive producer of movies.
Yeah. Mm. What was her feeling about the place of women in Chinese society? It's one thing to be the leader, to be the empress, but it's another thing to whether one, say, supports the lot of women in society.
Well, yes. Well, she actually, she started women's liberation in China. It wasn't just enough for her to want herself to be the ruler. She wanted the women to go out of their homes. She gave women education. She encouraged them to go abroad. But, you know, in 1903, there were so many women's magazines in China, and one proclaimed that the 20th century is going to be the century of women's rights, Yuquan. So she was really the champion of women's liberation in China.
I see, yeah. This seems like a book that you enjoyed writing, was it?
It was, very much. You know, she was not just a politician, a statesman. She was also a woman. She had a wide range of interests. You know, she bred dogs, she tamed birds. Birds could fly because she could whistle a bird song, bird songs. Birds could fly onto her fingertips. She loved gardening. She designed jewelry, clothes, and also she knew love. She fell in love with a eunuch in her late 20s and early 30s, but with tragic consequences. the eunuch was beheaded, and so were a number of people around him, and she suffered a nervous breakdown. She was also someone, you know, compared to my previous subject, Mao.
Yeah.
She knew remorse. She made mistakes. I mean, in particular, she mishandled the boxes, which caused a disaster for China. And she repented. She wrote a decree called Zizhe Zhizhao, which means the decree to reproach myself. She apologized to the victims involved, including Westerners. She made peace with the West, and she expressed regret many times to her entourage, to people around her. And also she then set about to correct her mistakes. And that's, I think, was I rather warmed to her, to know that she had a conscience. And then the thing is, she also, there was a lot of humor angle in the book, which I enjoyed writing very much. Yeah.
Are you hopeful that readers in China will be able to read this book?
Definitely. I think many of them will be able to read it. I'm translating the book into Chinese at the time, just like I translated my biography of Mao. And of course, in Chinese, both my biography of Mao and my previous book, Wild Swans, are banned in China, but they are published in Hong Kong and Taiwan. And today, Chinese tourists can go abroad, and they go to Hong Kong, Taiwan, very often to buy banned books.
This has been such a real pleasure for me to talk to you, because this has been such a fascinating book to read. Congratulations on it, and continued good luck with the book.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Yongchang.net is the website for more. The book is called Empress Dowager Cixi, The Concubine Who Launched Modern China. It's from Random House. It's author Yongchang. Join me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.